Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello there, welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? I hope you're well, which would set you apart from me because I'm not well. I'm not well at all. You might be able to hear it in my voice. I have a throat infection, I have a chest infection, and I'm feeling shit. Like really, really shit. So shit I had to go to the doctor and everything. I don't like going to the doctor. I don't suppose anybody really likes going to the doctor. Apart from, I don't know, mad people who like going to the doctor. Because you only go to the doctor when you're sick. Maybe there's people who like going to the doctor to pretend they're sick. There's probably some kind of symptom or condition where you seek doctor's approval, so you go to the doctor all the time, and maybe you don't ultimately like that. I don't know, but I had to go to the doctor. And he looked down my throat and went, "Ugh, ugh, I can see all kinds of things down there." I was like, "Oh, like what?" And he said, "You don't really want to know. It's bad, though. It's really bad. I'm going to give you some antibiotics." And I said, "Doctor, come on. What's going on here? Antibiotics? I need something more than that." And he said, "Like what?" And I said, "You know, some morphine." He said, "Look, I can't give you morphine for a throat infection or a chest infection." I said, "Come on, just a little bit of morphine. I'm not talking about loads. I'm only going to use it myself. I'm not going to like sell it on the streets or anything. I just need a little bit of morphine so I can just chew on it in the evening and just sort of pass out a bit on the sofa. And by the time I wake up, I'll feel all better." He was like, nah, you're going to have amoxicillin or some bag of shit like that. So I've got some of that. It does seem to be working, but not in the beautiful drift away magic way that the morphine works. Oh, sweet, sweet morphine. And I've got cough medicine. I've got some of that. And I have like a tonic as well, which tastes like rhubarb. It's got lots of iron and vitamins and stuff like that, which when you're not used to them, can kind of go through your body very, very rapidly. And that's only adding to my general discomfort. So here we are, just you and me. I was thinking about not doing a podcast because, you know, it is a broadcast medium, an aural medium. I have to be in your ears and my voice is all croaky and terrible and minging. And I thought, oh, maybe I should just spare the people my voice. Maybe I should look after myself. Maybe I should, you know, rest. Do what the doctor said. He said, rest. You don't have to work. He said, do you want a note for work? And I said, well, no, because I work for myself. I work from home. And my boss is an absolute cunt. Even if I gave him a note from the doctor, he'd say, you get to work, you prick. So I said, no. But he said, you should rest as much as possible. Do as much nothing as possible. But, you know, it's Friday and people need an arsecast. So here we are, and we're going to have an arsecast of some description. We're going to look ahead to the game at the weekend against Southampton. Yes, my brain is a little bit slow as well, so we're going to talk about that game. What else are we going to do? We're going to do some FanDuel, where you can win money playing one-day fantasy football. You can win some money if you're not me. I've been completely and utterly unsuccessful thus far at playing FanDuel, but, you know, I still have hopes. No, I don't. I lose. But you can win money. I'll tell you how to do that a little bit later on. And what else? I don't fucking know at this point. I don't know. I'll just sit here and waffle for a little while, recline in my chair, think about how life would be better if I just had a little bit of morphine. But here I am, morphine-less, sans morphine. What can you do, though? You just have to take the, what am I trying to say? You have to deal with whatever life serves you up. And it's definitely not morphine. So what's happened since the last time we spoke? Not a lot, because there was an interlull, but everybody seems to have come back from the interlull nice and fit and not broken, which is good. So that gives us plenty to choose from ahead of the game against Southampton. I remembered. So we've a big squad to choose from, and we'll, I guess, try and work out what sort of team he's going to play a bit later on in the show. The two latest new boys, I should say, Shkodran Mustafi and Lucas Perez, they've been assimilated into the group. They've been training. They've been having the larks and hijinks with their new teammates, smiling and a laughing and a chuckling to each other, making the jokes on the training ground, pointing at Coquelin's shoes. I don't know why, but I just feel like Francis Coquelin wears really terrible shoes. I could be completely wrong here. But if I had to guess one player in the Arsenal team who wore really terrible shoes, it would be Francis Coquelin. I'm not sort of sure what terrible shoes they are. I wouldn't say they're like Alex Song shoes, like the things that he used to wear. But I'd say he goes to, you know, charity shops and picks up old brogues that have been donated by the families of old dead men. Old men who have died, I guess, is the right way to put that. Old-fashioned brogues, and maybe two sizes too big for him, but he doesn't care. He'll just stuff some newspaper down the toes, you see. And he'll wear them, until the soles are worn away, and everyone goes, "Francis, would you not buy some actual nice shoes?" And he says, "No, this is how I roll when it comes to shoes. This is my shoe life." And I think we have to respect that. We have to respect Francis Coquelin's terrible shoes. So there. But look, yesterday, a book was published. In fact, I would say many books were published yesterday. I don't have a list of all the books that were published around the world. However, one particular book that will be of interest to Arsenal fans is by Amy Lawrence and Stuart McFarlane, who is the official club photographer. And they've released a book called The Wenger Revolution, 20 Years of Arsenal. And what it is essentially a picture book looking back over the 20 years of Arsene Wenger's time at the club, the highs, obviously the lows, with some interviews, some annotations, I guess you'd say, by Arsene Wenger. Looking back on all those bits, so he's gone back to relive some of the good moments and the bad. The book is out. The money goes to the Arsenal Foundation, which is a fantastic cause, as you all know. And Amy and Stuart are here to talk to me about the book right now. So hello to you guys.
Hi.
Hiya.
Listen, let's talk about the book, The Wenger Revolution. Amy, how did the book come about?
Well, the book really came about as an almost offspring, if you like, of the Invincible book of a couple of years ago, where Stuart very kindly provided me with a fantastic array of photographs to illustrate it. And he gave me a lot of stuff to look through and pick the things that were most appropriate. And there were so many fantastic pictures, and that was just one season that I was looking at, that I said to Stuart, "You've got to do a book of photographs, because over the years that you've been within the club, at the heart of it all, having the kind of access just by being around that, you know, most fans would give their right arms for, it tells a visual story really of what's been going on over a long period of time. And you know the way that these things work, the 20 year anniversary of Arsene Wenger's time at Arsenal coming up felt like quite a, you know, it marks a period of time. It's been an incredibly eventful period of time. It like any 20-year marriage, you're going to have moments. It's not going to be a straight line. It's going to be brilliant bits and bits that are a struggle. And you know, that's the nature of any kind of relationship, I suppose. And telling the story of that 20-year period through the photos and the access that Stuart has was to just seem so obvious. And with incredible luck, through the support of the Arsenal Foundation, we got some time with Arsene. And it was nice to be able to actually show him some of these photos. And particularly when he was looking at the images from quite a long time ago, you could see that he was really quite nostalgic and quite moved. And for a man who's usually quite reserved about what he portrays of himself in terms of his own emotions, I think it was nice for him to be able to sort of have a look himself in a way. Sure. So the fact that he gives photo captions to a lot of these images, I think makes it, you know, a really interesting look back at a period of Arsenal's history that will forever be remarkable.
The L'Équipe interview that Arsene Wenger did last year, which was a really brilliant interview, but he talked about the past and the future, and what he said was the only possible moment of happiness is the present. The past gives you regrets and the future uncertainties. Stuart, what was it like sort of looking back, maybe with Arsene Wenger, on some of the moments? Because during the 20 years there have been some incredible highs and obviously some big disappointments. Was he open to looking back on all of that?
He just looked at everything we put in front of him. Amy and I went through, basically, I went through 20 years of pictures, which was a few thousand, got it down to a manageable amount of pictures for Amy and I to go through. And then we went to the manager with about 100. I think it was about 100. Mm. So he spoke about every picture we put in front of him, the disappointment of losing the Champions League final, up to the highs of the Invincibles. And he was very open. And it's not a situation I've ever been in with him before, even being around him for that length of time, to sit down and have him to look at my work and say that's a good picture or that's not a very good picture, or no, to actually sit down and chat football with him and Amy. So it was a really massive thing for me, considering I've known him for so long.
Yeah,
I've never really our conversations are always quite short, which is, he's obviously very busy, I'm very busy as well, obviously,
of course,
but that was the longest time I've spent sat in his company chatting. It was amazing, really.
Yeah,
it's when you mention about him commenting on your photography, I remember there was one, a picture of Martin Keown and Duncan Ferguson grappling in a kind of really typical old-fashioned British gritty sort of scrap. Yeah. And he particularly said, oh, you know, about the photographers being able to capture these moments that really summed up, in many ways, you know, the different eras that have been within these 20 years. It was quite interesting.
Stuart, I think the last time we talked, we spoke about how much the job had changed since you first started taking pictures for Arsenal, obviously with the advent of the internet. I think at the time you had a fairly active Flickr account, which was the thing back then, but obviously now you've got to get your, well, you don't have to, but I guess it's expected that your work goes out on all the social media channels, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that kind of stuff. How much has that changed things for you? And obviously people have the ability to comment on your work and obviously let you know that you're to blame for us not signing players. I mean, how does that work these days?
it's changed, but it's changed for the better. Photography's sort of risen from the ashes in a way through social media. So I think we're more appreciated, myself and David, who's the other club photographer, I think we're more appreciated now, because our imagery brings a lot of interest in the football club. I try not to look at all the replies I get to pictures. I get plenty of signed players and stuff about various players and manager, and I try not to read, and I don't ever respond to it. But it just goes with the territory, I suppose.
Yeah.
But photography has sort of risen again, and we feel as though, and that's probably the reason why this book's happened, because we were sort of disappearing a bit behind all the TV people. But now, you know, the hits at the club get through our pictures, you know, on Instagram, they get 100,000 views and stuff like that. It's, you know, it makes you actually feel worthy to be working at Arsenal now.
And how was it looking back over, I don't know, 20 years worth of images? Was there stuff you had forgotten? Was there stuff you looked at and went, oh, can't use that? I mean, it must have been quite a trip down memory lane for you. Time-consuming one, I guess, as well.
Yeah, it's quite daunting because we've got probably about 1.5 million pictures in our library. So to go through that, it was quite tricky. I think Amy and I worked out some chapters, so we narrowed that down. But it's great to go back and look at stuff, because I suppose it's the same as a writer. You write a book and then you don't ever read it. You just put it to one side. And same with your photographs as well, because you only really look forward to your next set of pictures. Mm. So actually going back and looking through some old pictures was really nice. And there's some stuff I haven't seen for 10, 15 years, and stuff that I took at the time and thought wasn't very good. And now they seem to have it was a poignant moment maybe that we hadn't ever thought of before. So it was a great experience, but it took a long time.
It's quite nostalgic in a sense as well, looking back particularly on lots of pictures of Highbury.
Yeah.
I mean, that was what struck me, as well as obviously looking back at in the first half of the Wenger era, when there was clearly more tangible success in terms of trophies, and you looked at certain players and the way they carried themselves and things like that, which are evocative. But I really felt, I've often found myself just drawn to looking at the background and seeing Highbury, whether it was inside the dressing room or some of the kind of nooks and crannies that were within the ground, or whether it was the pictures of the faces in the crowd behind a moment happening. Because it was such a magical place, and I think it was so associated with that first half of the Wenger era.
What were his thoughts on Highbury? Well, obviously you must have discussed that with him.
Well, that was something I thought was amazing as well, because he seemed almost a little bit embarrassed when he was looking at some of the pictures to start with, as if he thought to himself, shall I say this or not? And then he did, and he said, you're probably going to laugh at me, but sometimes I just drive past and stop for a bit and have a look.
Oh,
and I found that a really striking moment, because, you know, you'd expect a supporter to feel that. You would expect, you know, a fan to have that link with the place and go back and kind of pay some sort of homage to it, or feel overwhelmed by seeing it again and the memories that it brings. But, you know, the manager, who, that was his place of work, essentially.
He said that amazing thing about, because as a photographer, you just take pictures. You don't think of sounds and stuff. But he said this thing about the tunnel, about the narrow tunnel and the sound of the players' studs on the steps on the way down, which I'd never really thought about until he said it. And it did bring back so many memories of, I used to stand in the tunnel and photograph players as they walked out. That sound, you know, it's a unique sound. You don't get it at football grounds anymore, the new football grounds, you know. Metal studs on concrete steps. It's quite amazing, really.
So look, the book is The Wenger Revolution. It's out, published today, but you're having a launch towards the end of the month in the Tollington, I believe.
Yeah, details not quite, but nearly confirmed. But yeah, on the 29th of September, the day after the home game against Basel.
Coming over?
Yeah, you're really welcome.
I'm just going to be on my way back from New York, actually, so I'm not sure, but I'll try.
But yeah, it should be a fun night. So anyone who fancies popping down, we'll be in the Tollington, and coming on.
Brilliant. Okay, well, look, let's just move on a little bit and talk a bit more general football, Amy. Towards the end of the transfer window, people's minds were put at ease with two fairly substantial signings. Shkodran Mustafi came in from Valencia, Lucas Perez in from Deportivo La Coruña, and it seems to have pretty much completed the squad, you would say. Mustafi, a player we've been linked with for some time, and Perez seems to be one of those classic Arsene Wenger moves that nobody was really expecting, a striker from left field out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be turning a big porky pie if I sat here and claimed expertise on the nuances of Lucas Perez's game. But it seems obvious, having gone for Vardy so early in the window and the way that planned out, that maybe it's not so shocking that he's gone for someone who, by all accounts, has pretty similar qualities and that sharpness of speed, the ability to sort of run wide and then come in centrally, a kind of hunger and a desire that you associate with someone who has maybe had to wait a bit for their career to really kickstart. So, you know, in many ways, if you can't get the one that you want and you can get something that's in the same mold, there's a logic there. Mm. I guess there's also a financial logic in that there was a, you know, around about £100 million in this window to be spent. And that's just a whole interesting sub discussion where you can argue looking at the squad. You know, if you rewind to the end of last season, you've got £100 million. What do you do with it? Of course, you're victims of the market to an extent, because any player that you might like or any players you might like, it's all got to add up somehow. And, you know, would you have spent the lot on, you know, obviously didn't go for Pogba, but might they have gone for it? Or would you have spent the vast majority of it on a whacking great bid for someone like Griezmann or Aubameyang, who you know is going to be of a calibre and of a status that is going to bring something in personality and in charisma, as well as in actually their ability to play football? That's one way of doing it. But if you do that, then you can't buy four or five players. And, you know, the defense centre-half situation quickly became urgent. So it was a case of, if you're going to buy, are you going to buy someone to get you over a few months? Well, maybe the history of watching Arsenal in recent seasons tells you that wasn't the thing to do. Because obviously Mertesacker's not getting any younger or faster for the great sort of guy he is to have around the place and the great professional he is. And Gabriel has plainly struggled to make the kind of impact, irrespective of the injury, that perhaps everybody was hoping he would do 18 months into signing for the club. And Callum Chambers, by going off on loan, obviously the feeling was that he needed to play more. So if that's where you're at, you've got to go relatively big. So they had to spend a, you know, relatively substantial amount of money on Mustafi. So it doesn't free up the mega money to go for a centre forward. And clearly centre forwards, when you look around the market, have been so insanely priced over this window. And there are so few of them about. It's not like you've got a great selection and you think, oh, well, I can go for the 80 million type, or I can go for a 60 million or a 50 or 40 or 30 or 20. You know, there aren't that many. So everybody's being ratcheted up in terms of their supposed value. So I think going for a Lucas Perez, who knows what we're going to see. With luck, he'll be that Vardy type player, and he'll bring great energy and goals and personality and a fearlessness to the team. It's a big ask for a player who you're kind of thinking, adaptation wise, how much time you're really giving him. You know, he hasn't got to go straight into the team in the same way that probably Mustafi will. Perez probably can start. I imagine he might well start on the bench for a few games while he has a look and gets tasters of action, because with Alexis Sanchez, Giroud, Theo Walcott, etc. around, Ozil, Cazorla, so on, in terms of creativity, it's probably not urgent for him to start on Saturday.
Yeah.
Whereas I expect Mustafi to start.
Sure. I mean, when you look at the purchases that he's made, he's brought in two central defenders in Rob Holding and Mustafi. He's brought in a fairly robust central midfielder in Granit Xhaka, on top of Mohamed Elneny, who arrived last January, and a striker as well. Could we say that he's pretty much addressed what people would consider the spine of the team?
I checked to that coming, you know, just over a year ago, that is every part of the spine.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that it's an important part to get right. The key is to get the balance of the team right, knowing that you're going to be having to shuffle around because that's the nature of modern football. But have a system and have, ideally speaking, you know, certain things that's your first choice. You know, if you've got a big game, you know that this is going to be your go-to team if everybody's fit. And at the moment, we don't know what that is.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to say. I mean, it's difficult to pick out what will be or should be the first 11, particularly in the midfield areas where he's, I think he's got so many choices that it's going to take a little bit of experimentation to get things the way he wants to. I mean, is that a good problem for him to have rather than sort of the predictable, okay, well, this is the first 11 because they're, okay, the most fit and they're the players we've got to choose?
I mean, the nature of modern football is there's always more juggling than you think. I mean, in some ways, when you look at Leicester's season, the luck that they had in being able to field a core of the team that was very seldom changed for a lot of that season gave them a great platform. Just, you know, Ranieri stumbled upon something that worked. And remember, Ranieri arrived in pre-season, so it wasn't like some great master plan that, you know, had taken a long time to pull together. He kind of chucked a few things around and tinkered a little bit with what had been a team that had done really well for the previous 3 or 4 months. And it all just, it suddenly took off. And I think that, you know, I expect that probably between now and Christmas, one of the things that Arsene Wenger will be trying to do is to find the best click, you know, and there'll be a bit of experimenting here and there. And some teams, you know, might absolutely work, and other bits might not be so balanced. So, I mean, obviously, you're going to get a different vibe from your midfield if you play Coquelin and Elneny than if you're playing Zola, you know, alongside Xhaka, for example, and various other alternatives between that four. So we'll have to see what emerges in the way that the Cazorla Coquelin partnership that was a great foundation a couple of years ago just sort of appeared from nowhere. Yeah. And I think a similar thing will happen up front because there's still a bit of variation that you can do with whether you're going to play Giroud in the middle and then the kind of usual three behind, and will it be Ozil and Lucas and Alexis, or will it be some other combination because you need to be a bit in certain games a bit more defensive or this or that? You know, it'd be quite interesting to see what Arsene is seeing in training on the day-to-day basis, which is what influences his decision on the weekend.
Sure.
Pretty much all the
Stuart, you see them in training because you're taking all the pictures. I know maybe you're not the right person to ask, but how do they look to be settling in? I mean, people talk about adaptation when a player comes to a new club, but Xhaka was talking last week about how everything at Arsenal was just so perfect for them to settle in and play their best football.
Well, the environment at the training ground is amazing and it's welcoming for the players. You know, it's a lovely place to be around, especially when the sun's out this time of year.
Yeah.
But I've only covered one training session with the two newer signings, and they seem to have fitted in really well, look really happy, good, both very chatty, good talkers. I think they'll fit in really well. I think the manager will always buy players that he feels will fit in with the group. So, I'm positive. Always positive, me.
Is Perez an English speaker yet, or is he hanging out with the Spanish contingent or the Spanish-speaking contingent?
He does speak English because his father actually lives in London, has lived in London for about 10 years, I think. Mm. So when I did his signing pictures, he said it wasn't great, but his English was far better than my Spanish. And Mustafi, can't even say his first name yet, his English is perfect, like you'd expect most German internationals to speak perfect English.
Yeah, he managed to avoid the Scouse accent from his years in Everton. A bit of a blessing there.
Yeah, he did say that it did develop when he was there a little bit, but he's forgotten it now.
Okay, that's good.
We'll teach him how to speak properly.
Yes, no doubt. Amy, just want to talk finally just a bit about Jack Wilshere. The loan of Callum Chambers to Middlesbrough, you can see why that happened. He's still a very young player, only 21, a centre-half, and he's at an age where he really needs to play. But Jack Wilshere is going to be 25 in January, and I suppose on the one hand you can say he needs to play, but on the other, would he not be better off playing or fighting for his place at Arsenal? How did you view the move and the way it seemed to come about so quickly towards the end of the window?
I'll be honest, I was a bit mystified by it all. I've always had a bit of a soft spot for Jack since seeing him sometimes playing for the youth teams. And apart from his obviously talent that stood out, he had that real strength of personality and character. And you could see that he had a pride in the shirt, and it's a bit of a kind of cheap thing to say, but I think he really felt it. And I sometimes think you underestimate the influence of having people around the team who really, to borrow a phrase that a couple of my old mates used to say in our youth, really knows what it means. And I think that, you know, for all his injury difficulties, which are well documented, he is a very good person to have in your dressing room and in your club. If it's particularly for Arsenal, he'd be good in any dressing room, I can imagine, because he's got a good character. But he felt a lot for the club, and having come through, had that slight part of the furniture feel, I think, a little bit around him. Sometimes when you're part of the furniture, you can get taken a bit for granted. But I just think if you're going into a tough, you know, a real under pressure game at White Hart Lane, or, you know, got to play Mourinho coming up or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
I think if you have Jack around and in your dressing room, you know he understands in a way that you, for all the professionalism and the goodwill of other players that are not so rooted in the club, then clearly not going to have that same sense of what it really means. Mm. So I think quite apart from the player, I think that's a bit of a loss.
What do you think of the manager's decision then to allow him to leave? Because if we come to understand that it was Jack who asked to leave on loan because he wants to play more regularly, does it say something that Arsene Wenger has allowed him to do that rather than say, look, you know, you're a very important player here. You're a little bit down the pecking order, but, you know, you understand why that is. Stay and fight for your place.
Yeah, I guess. And, you know, good on Jack if he did feel that he was that desperate to play, that it was time to try something else. But I think it would have been, I think if he had have stayed, he would have had plenty of football, given the usual state of affairs with Arsenal and injuries. It's not too surprising, even if you are a bit down the pecking order, to find you suddenly playing a lot. But quality-wise, if he did have the fitness, I can't see why he wouldn't be as, you know, on the same level as anybody else in that midfield looking for, you know, being chosen and up for selection.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've no idea. But, you know, you wonder if just the cumulative effect of the injuries played its part, and whether it's Arsene maybe thinking that if he's fallen down the pecking order, that's partly out of a sense that he might not feel able to trust in Jack being available. I don't know whether it's a kind of almost sort of like a Diaby syndrome, you know, because for so many years, Arsene kept hoping that Diaby would be okay. And, you know, there was a space in the squad for him. And it obviously became an impossible situation and an unhelpful situation, really sad situation for Diaby, but difficult from the manager's point of view. When you know, if you're running out of players, you've got injury crisis, and one of your players, there was always a fair chance he was going to struggle to play.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether that's part of the thinking, because Aaron Ramsey sometimes, you know, can be a bit vulnerable in terms of injury, and you just think maybe do you want to have two players in that central midfield area that you're not sure if they're going to be able to be fully fit and firing for the whole of the season. You know, they do a gazillion tests on the physical capabilities of the players, and it might be that was part of things, but I mean, I'm guessing.
Do you feel like it's like this is a chance to I won't say prove himself, because we know the talent is there, but certainly prove his fitness. The worry might be that this is the beginning of the end to a certain extent, that if you're allowed to leave at this stage in your career as very much a senior professional, it might cast doubt over your future at Arsenal. But do you think if he plays well and performs for Bournemouth, that the door remains pretty much open for him?
I really hope so. I would worry that if he plays well and is fit all season and is great, that he's got a year left on his contract and he might think to himself, well, if they were willing to, you know, let me go, maybe that's not, you know, the place that maybe that commitment's difficult to replicate. Mm. That might be a bigger risk than the other way around. I think if he has a great season and is fully fit, then it would be mad for Arsenal to not be really keen to bring him back.
Mm. All right, well, look, we'll see how it plays out, and we better leave it there. Amy, thanks very much. Stuart, thank you very much indeed, and best of luck with the book.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed to Amy and to Stuart. The book looks absolutely great. It's called The Wenger Revolution. It's published by Bloomsbury Sport, and if you want some more details on that, you can find them on Stuart's Twitter, at Stuart_PhotoAFC, and Amy Lawrence at AmyLawrence71. And if you check today's blog on arsblog.com, you'll find some links and bits and pieces there to point you in the right direction. And as soon as we have final details for the launch, which is taking place in the Tollington, we'll give you those too, so you can get yourselves down and get a beautifully signed copy of this fantastic new book.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Right then, let's talk very quickly about FanDuel. FanDuel is one-day fantasy football where you can win real-life, honest-to-goodness cash. That's right. You can get the apps or you can play online at fanduel.co.uk. You don't have to commit for a whole season. You don't have to do any of that kind of stuff. You just enter the various contests. The contest that we're entering this week is the £7,500 fan favourite. It costs £5 to enter the £7,500 worth in prizes, and 400 people will win cash. That covers all the fixtures this weekend. All right. Sorry, my voice is really going. I have been quite unsuccessful in trying to win any money, but my team to try and win some this week is Cech, Callum Chambers, Matip, Robertson. I don't even know who the fuck that is. Robertson? Who's he? seriously, I've got no idea. Robertson? He's a defender anyway. I don't know who he plays for. Hazard, Shaqiri, Mahrez, Mane, Alexis Sanchez, Callum Wilson, and Negredo. So apart from my wild card in there of Robertson, I think we're doing okay. So will that team win some money? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. If you want to sign up with FanDuel, use the promo code ARSBLOG. All right? Use the promo code ARSBLOG. And if you don't win cash in your first entry, they'll refund it to you. So you can just use it again for another one. So check it out. Go to fanduel.co.uk, enter the promo code ARSBLOG in the promo code field, and away you go. You can also download the apps for iOS and for Android. So check it out, fanduel.co.uk. So what else is going on? I don't know. I don't know how much more my voice is able to deal with. Matthew Flamini has gone to Crystal Palace on a free transfer. And I think we all know what this means. We're going to have to prepare ourselves for the crushing disappointment of Mesut Ozil leaving us for Palace next year to go and play with Matt Flam, and also, of course, to get down and dirty with creepy Uncle Dancer Alan Pardew. That's right. Anyway, Flamini's there, but Nicholas Bentner, he signed for Nottingham Forest. The greatest striker that ever lived is now playing for Nottingham Forest. And who is it that Arsenal are going to be playing in the Capital One, Rumbelows, Littlewoods, Coca-Cola, Milk Cup, whatever the fuck it's called these days? That's right. Nottingham Forest. It's a reunion with Big Mick Bentner. It's going to be really something, isn't it? What a guy. What a guy he is. I don't know what the fuck goes on in his head, to be perfectly honest. I'm not sure anyone can really figure it out, but he's 28 now. He'll be 29 in January, but until such time as he's 29, he remains 28. And, you know, for all the laughs and jokes, he could have been a much better player, or he could have had a much more successful career if, you know, he didn't get his winkle out and smear it all over the back of a taxi. You know, that kind of stuff. The stuff you really shouldn't be doing. Not just if you're a professional footballer. Nobody should be wiping their willy on the back of a taxi. I'm sorry. There's no justification for that whatsoever. And Nicholas Bentner is a guy who had a lot of talent, just not anywhere near enough application. But we'll see what happens. Will he be out to show us what we're missing when we play Nottingham Forest? I don't know. I would say, if I had to guess, it's going to be 50-50. He either will or he won't. And, you know, they dismiss statistics as a passing fad. I mean, it's inarguable right there. So, I guess we'll look forward to seeing him. So, look, this weekend, we've got Southampton at home, and sorry about this, but the end of the transfer window, you know, after the game against Liverpool, people were unhappy, of course, because you lose at home to Liverpool. The draw against Leicester, you can sort of compartmentalize that, and then you win against Watford, you sign a couple of players, the squad looks full, the squad looks complete, it's got depth and options and all that kind of stuff, and so there's a bit of goodwill generated, right? But the whole point of signing players is not to make fans happy. That's not why you sign players. You sign players to make the team better, to make the squad better, to help you win games. And that's what these two guys, along with the other recruits this summer, have got to do. I think Mustafi is probably going to start alongside Koscielny at centre half. You know, he's experienced enough to come into the team and not get freaked out by making his debut. Perez, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see what the manager thinks of him. As Amy was saying, he might be a guy that comes in off the bench for the first couple of games. But certainly he gives us a different option at centre forward. And I do think that we're going to see him playing from wide positions as well. Maybe that left footer on the right-hand side that has, you know, served other teams and other players well. And I don't think it's really something we've seen an awful lot of during Arsene Wenger's tenure. Obviously, Robert Pires, a right-footed player playing from the left. A lot of the players that play down the left have been right-footed, of course. Alexis, Oxlade-Chamberlain has played there, etc., etc. Iwobi, he plays there. But to have a left-footer coming in from the right-hand side, maybe that's a little bit of extra variety as well. So we'll have to wait and see what sort of a team he picks. I don't think it'll be too different from the one that started against Watford. Certainly the midfield of Xhaka and Cazorla and Ozil worked very well. You could see Alexis move back to the left with Olivier Giroud coming back into the team for a start, now that he's a bit more up to speed in terms of his match fitness. But apart from that, I don't think there'll be too many surprises. And it'll be interesting to see what the manager does in terms of, you know, working his options and using the full depth of his squad throughout this season. So let's hope we can continue or carry that bit of goodwill into the performance and into the game against Southampton on Saturday. The Emirates has been a bit tetchy at times, and that's because of the way that we've played or the way that we haven't performed. So if we can, you know, take this goodwill, put in a good performance, get 3 points and play well against Southampton, maybe we can just start to get a little bit of momentum going. The two Manchester sides play each other this weekend, Mourinho against Pep Guardiola, of course. Given the state of the table, that's a game that I would like to see turn out as a draw. But obviously, the animosity between the two managers, if that could translate itself to the players and they spent 90 minutes kicking the absolute fuck out of each other, I'd really enjoy that too. Like, if it finished 8 men each, I'd really love that. As long as it was a draw, that would be absolutely fucking amazing. Just kill each other. Come on. Let it all go. Get it out there. You know, start as you mean to go on. The two of them hate each other. Their team should hate each other. There should be a bit more hate. Just kick the fuck out of each other for all of our entertainment. For the neutral. Do it for the neutral. Don't give us a spectacular game of football. Give us ultra-violence. That's what we really want. Ultra-violence and a draw. So we can just close the gap a little bit. All right. Well, look, I'm going to leave it there because I just don't have the voice to continue any longer. Hopefully I'll be a bit more mended by the time Monday comes around. James and I will be discussing the Southampton game on the Arsecast Extra. And of course, we've got Champions League football next week. We do, don't we? Oh my goodness. Yeah, that's right. We've got our first Champions League game away at PSG. So plenty going on over the next whatever that is, some days, hours, a number of hours, whatever it is. My eyes hurt. How is that possible? Thank you as ever for listening. I'll catch you on the next one. Until then, have yourselves a great weekend. Cheers. Bye bye.
Hello everyone. This is Arsene Wenger Hawkins. You might have seen a story this week, which said that I would not allow Jose Mourinho to sit beside me. This story is 100% false. I said, yeah, you can sit beside me, bitch. But if you do, I am gonna beat you down like a stone cold mongoose. I'll bash your ass. I'll dry hump you with my wheelchair. I'll tie you up and whip you with dead eels. I'll electrocute your nipples. I'll pour hot wax on your balls. I'll fondle you with fish knives covered in turpentine. And when you're spent, I'll do it all over again. Now, do you still want to sit down? And he said, okay. He's one kinky fucker, let me tell you. Oh yes.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.